The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
World leaders are reacting to the news of US President Joe Biden's decision to pull out of the race for the White House. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky thanked Biden for his unwavering support in his country's war against Russia. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer described it as not an easy decision to make, but one that he will have arrived at, taking into account the best interests of the American people. Among those yet to comment is the Chinese leader Xi Jinping, I don't think we've heard from North Korea yet, but all over the world, leaders are complimenting Joe Biden for his service and perhaps his wisdom in making his decision. Joining me now to discuss all of this, Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie, and live from the US is Terry Sheridan, managing editor of WSHU Public Radio. Good morning and welcome to you both. Terry, I'll go to you first. This is the morning after, the night before the decision was made by Joe Biden. What is the general reaction in the United States?
Well, among Democrats, there's a sense of relief. There's a sense of rejuvenation. Among Republicans, there's a sense of told you so, that he was not fit for the job. And among those very few that are still uncommitted, well, there's a brand new race for them to evaluate.
Now, much was made by Donald Trump of Joe Biden's infirmity, but Trump himself has inherited the mantle of the oldest presidential candidate ever now that Joe Biden's not in the field. How do you think that is going to play?
I think that's going to play. Well, no matter who, I don't want to say no matter who, but almost everyone who possibly could be a candidate. Now, again, Kamala Harris is by far the favorite at this point, but almost any other candidate, if there is an open process, would be significantly younger than Donald Trump. So that definitely will come into play. And as you said, he is now the oldest candidate. And if he was to be elected, he would be the oldest president ever if he finished out his term.
Now, on this side of the Atlantic, we don't hear that much about Kamala Harris. No doubt we'll hear more in the coming weeks. But being on the other side of the Atlantic, you probably see much more of her being covered on the networks. How has she been performing?
Well, there are some concerns among the Democrats that she has not been performing well. Now, over the past 3 years of the administration, she has somewhat taken a back seat. The one area where she has stood out and which could be a big plus for the Democrats is on women's rights and on reproductive rights, in which she's had a strong and loud and consistent voice. That is something that Democrats hope will resonate with women, especially women of color, who might be, you know, we're feeling a little bit uncertain about supporting Joe Biden again for a second term.
Now, we've had in the past few years a number of firsts. We had Hillary Clinton running for the highest office in the land. And although she didn't make it, defeated by Donald Trump in the Electoral College, she did win the popular vote, which would suggest that were the popular vote to be the decider, that America is ready for a woman president. And of course, we had the first black president in Barack Obama. Now we have the possibility of a woman of color, if you like, ticking two boxes in going before the electorate.
Well, you could tick three boxes. She's also a woman of South Asian descent, so that would be the first if she became president. But there are concerns that parts of the country are not ready for that. They're not ready for a woman. They're not ready, especially for a black woman. So that is a concern. Democrats, if they do choose Kamala Harris, are going to push ahead with that anyway, and that becomes part of her story. But again, there are some Republicans who are adamantly against her and have been against her pretty much for the past 4 years since she was first announced as Joe Biden's running mate in 2016.
What do you make, Terry, of the calls by some Republicans that this transition, if you like, from Biden to Harris should be repudiated? Because after all, they did have primaries and Joe Biden was the selected candidate.
Well, I mean, Joe Biden, no one forced Joe Biden to drop out yesterday. Yes, you could say he was under heavy pressure, but no one forced him to drop out. The delegates are free to vote any way they want to vote at the convention or in the days leading up, actually. So it's a case of, if the delegates are still voting, they're the ones that ultimately are going to make the decision. That is a line of Republican attack. I don't think it's going to stick.
Yeah. Now, they did change the system, bringing in these primaries where the delegates are selected and then go to convention, and they vote as they are mandated. But back in the day, in the time of Lyndon Baines Johnson, when he pulled out of the race, although it may have been thought the Vietnam War was the heart of it, we have learned that it was perhaps his health was at the heart of it. He was actually scared that he'd have a heart attack and wouldn't make it through another term. So someone pulling out on the grounds of health is not unprecedented.
No, it's not unprecedented, and you can you can even go back to Dwight D. Eisenhower in the 50s. Now, again, he was constitutionally prohibited from running for a third term, but he had a series of heart attacks while he was in office, which diminished his second term. And so it's not uncommon for presidents, people wanting to be presidents, to pull out or to have second thoughts because of their health. This is the first one where specifically, it's because of the age. Going back to Eisenhower for a moment, he was 67 when he left office. Lyndon Baines Johnson died at 64. So that shows you how much that has moved from 67 to 81.
Now, Donald Trump has already derided Kamala Harris in public. He's mocked her. In the same way as he marked members of his own party who went against him, be it Nikki Haley or little Marco Rubio or any of them, he picks a nickname and he's had a go at Kamala Harris. Do you think that is a productive way for Donald Trump to campaign, having a go at the fact that he's nuts is what he said about her, and the fact that she's a woman?
Well, here's the problem for Donald Trump, or the issue for Donald Trump. As we have seen all through these years, he has problems with women who challenge him, and they tend to get under his skin. I mean, lately, last winter, we saw with Nikki Haley. So Kamala Harris is someone that's going to get under Donald Trump's skin. If that happens, that will throw him off message and it causes him to say things that he wouldn't want to say. So it's going to be interesting. Yeah, he's going to go after her. He's going to belittle her. But she's also going to get under his skin.
Do you think Kamala Harris will play by the rules and, not do the dirty tricks routine? Because in a situation where you can say 25% of all women have been the subject of some sort of sexual attack, and, she will be debating opposite a man who is convicted in a civil court of sexual assault. Is she likely to bring those kind of things up? Has she got the mettle to do that?
I think she could if she chooses to. I think what she's also going to point to is the fact that she's a former prosecutor and she will be across the stage with a convicted felon. I think that's the dynamic that she's going to bring. And also, as you talked about, the toughness and the metal, that, hey, I'm a prosecutor. I can deal with people like Donald Trump. I can deal with, I've been tough. I've put people in jail. I put people like Donald Trump in jail. So I think that's something that she's going to hit on harder.
It's been pointed out, though, that she is a woman who's used to being a first. She was the first Attorney General of California. Everywhere she's gone, she tended to be the first person of her either racial background or her gender to achieve that particular office. So she won't be daunted by the prospect of being perhaps the first president who's female of the United States.
No, I don't think she'll be daunted by that at all. I mean, again, it's been a slow process, but you had Hillary Clinton. Go back to the 80s and Geraldine Ferraro as Walter Mondale's vice presidential candidate, then Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. So, I mean, again, it's a slow process. I don't think she's going to be daunted. And I don't think those who support the Democrats are going to be worried about that.
All right. Well, we'll watch this unfold. Quite an extraordinary election year, it has to be said. Terry Sheridan, managing editor of WSAGU Public Radio, thank you very much for joining us. Listening to all of that is Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with the Journal.ie. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Pat.
Well, he finally did it, didn't he?
Yeah. Look, I think he took too long to do it. I think that's indicative of how desperately he wanted to continue with this. But I think the mountain of polling data, which I think was very, very negative, including one poll showing him 7 points behind in the state of Michigan, I think that was very, very damning, as well as the donors' reticence to continue funding not only him, but candidates up and down the ballot. And the prospect that this would be a devastating day for the Democratic Party and a real stain on his legacy, I think that's what moved him in the end.
Because if he had lost and handed the presidency to Donald Trump, he would have been certainly blamed, and that would have been possibly the only thing of his legacy that would be remembered.
Yes, and I think, Pat, at this stage, it's too late. I mean, if Trump is elected, I think Biden still will be blamed by an awful lot of people. And I also think the Democratic National Committee shares a tremendous amount of that blame, because this is a mess in many ways of its own creation. The chat, the conversations, the move to prevent Biden from seeking a second term should have begun some time ago, because anyone with eyes and ears knew that he was declining, knew that a disastrous debate performance could well happen, yet they acquiesced to the demands of the Biden team, which was a terrible, terrible mistake.
That question of who knew, I mean, we're hearing now that, you know, people who met him, one person, I've forgotten who it was, who met him, I think in Normandy, said, "I knew him well. He was a great friend of mine for all my life. He didn't recognize me. He didn't know who I was." So, I mean, a closely guarded secret, almost like in the old days of the Soviet Union, where a leader might be dead for weeks before it would be announced to the world.
Yeah, that's what it called to mind, really. And it's a very sorry saga. I mean, you can understand from one point of view how Biden desperately wanted to continue. This is a guy who, you know, has made a living out of overcoming adversity and doing things people told him he could not do. And he's overcome a lot of things, in fairness to him. He has an otherwise very solid, strong career in public service. And when he finally got to the top of the mountain, he wasn't going to give that up easily. Yet politics is a very tough business, Pat, as everyone knows. And the reality is that when you're going up against Donald Trump, and when the stakes are as high as the Democrats think they are, that is, democracy is on the line, Trump could be, do all sorts of things in the second term, you do not send somebody who's vulnerable up against him. And that's why I cannot fathom why, rather than trying to steer him in a different direction, the Democratic National Committee actually paved the way to him, for him to have easy access to a second term. And now they're in this mess, and it's a mess entirely of their own making. The race has changed. Now that it's likely that Kamala Harris will be the nominee, the race has changed, but still, it is very much advantaged Donald Trump. Mm.
Looking, though, at a CNN poll of polls, which looked at a whole pile of polls in the immediate aftermath of the debate, they pitched Harris versus Trump. And Trump, 48%. Harris, though, this poll of polls, 47%. Tighter than one would have thought.
Yeah, tighter than one would have thought. But I mean, you know, it's been said before, and I'll say it again. I paid not so much attention to those national polls conducted on that basis. What I look at are poll aggregates, and poll aggregates in the battleground states, given the nature of the Electoral College system. And if you look at the commanding leads that Donald Trump has across the battleground states, yes, this changes the game, but it doesn't diminish the work that Harris has to do. The question in my mind is, at the moment, the states of Georgia and Arizona, with Biden as the putative nominee, those states were really out of reach for Democrats increasingly. The question becomes whether Harris at the top of the ticket or potentially someone else could change that dynamic. That's what Democrats will be hoping for, especially because, in my view, if it comes down to Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, which is the way it was looking, I think Kamala Harris could be a tough sell in those states in middle America.
Mm. Suppose she picked Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania as a running mate. That might get her one of those swing states.
In my view, Pat, and I've said it a number of times, in my view, I think she has to. I think she has to be ruthlessly transactional about who she chooses. There is some talk out there that she could pick another woman, and this would be, you know, a really spectacular statement, and it's worth taking a gamble. I think we're past that stage. The reality is the Democratic Party cannot win the presidency, in my view, looking at the numbers, unless they win the state of Pennsylvania. Now, picking Josh Shapiro, that state's governor, who is pretty popular there, that certainly doesn't guarantee that she'll win Pennsylvania, but it gives her a much better chance than if she were to pick somebody else.
Now, the scrutiny of Donald Trump, I mean, his base is, you know, MAGA base, looking at everything domestic and through the domestic lens. But I was very interested to see an interview with Caitlin Collins with John Bolton, former under George W. Bush, former ambassador to the UN, former national security advisor for Trump. And he talked about that phone call where Trump said, I had a great phone call with Zelensky. Really great. Zelensky didn't have much to say about that phone call himself. But John Bolton was talking about the potential consequences of another Trump presidency for Ukraine.
Well, I think it's very bad news for Ukraine. I don't think Donald Trump has a philosophy. He doesn't do policy. He does deals. That's how he sees the world. And he said in the statement about his conversation with Zelensky, I, as your next president of the United States, will bring peace to the world and end the war that has cost so many lives and devastated countless innocent families. Now, I'm not a shrink, but I know the technical term for somebody who says, I will bring peace to the world. This is nuts. He has no idea how he's going to negotiate an end to this war, except I think that his affinity for Vladimir Putin will lead to concessions to the Russian side that are going to be devastating for Ukraine. So I think this is a very dark moment. And it's not just a dark moment for Ukraine, because we haven't come to their assistance out of the goodness of our hearts, out of an act of charity. We have been assisting Ukraine because it's in the core of American national security interest to defend against unprovoked aggression on the continent of Europe and to try and get peace and stability there that benefits us in innumerable ways.
Now, there's a man who's got a track record as a diplomat and as an analyst. What do you think of what John Bolton had to say? And is it likely to resonate anywhere in people who might be Republican by instinct?
I think the second point is the key one there. I think Donald Trump does believe that he can sort out Ukraine very quickly and expeditiously. But here's the problem, and I think Bolton was alluding to it there. The fashion in which he would sort it out is to go to Zelensky and say, look, the Russians are taking this much of your territory. And if you don't like it, tough. And with the idea that simultaneously he is going to tell Putin that if you go anywhere else, we will stop you from doing so. And by mere force of personality, Putin will stop dead in his tracks. That, I think, is how Trump simplistically understands how he can solve this. And indeed, it's worth noting, Pat, that J.D. Vance has gone on record, his vice presidential running mate, saying he doesn't care what happens in Ukraine. So you have that sort of very isolationist mindset permeating the Republican Party. Now, are there some Republicans who would be bothered by that? Yes, but they are small in number. The people like Bill Kristol, people in the neoconservative movement, they are a very, very small faction of the Republican Party, and they have been replaced by lots of people in the white working class, Latinos, et cetera, unlikely Republicans who have gravitated in their direction because of Trump and because Trump understands that isolationism, no matter how unrealistic we might view it to be in this part of the world, isolationism is the dominant thread in the thinking of the American people when it comes to foreign policy.
One text here from Noel. The Republicans are really miffed with Biden pulling out. It's turned an uncontested stroll to the White House into something now that has to be won. Significant readjustment is required by them.
Yeah, I mean, look, this has changed the dynamics of the race. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, I think sometimes when we see Trump, you know, reflexively saying that Kamala Harris is crazy, I think it's almost reflecting a nervousness. Donald Trump and his team were desperate to run against Joe Biden. Lots of the attacks, lots of the things, lots of the strategies that they had devised were with Joe Biden in mind. Lots of that is not going to land as easily on Kamala Harris as it would have on Biden. That having been said, remember, Harris has her own vulnerabilities. She ran for president herself, and you know, as Terry was saying, she failed rather miserably. She is tieable to the Biden administration as the vice president on the, what may be the two biggest issues in the election, inflation and immigration. And the Trump people will go to town on that. And lastly, Pat, and here's where I think the race could get ugly, especially in places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, on AM radio and other outlets that are listened to by older people. Her ties to Black Lives Matter, which is deeply unpopular with lots of working class voters, people the Democrats are going to need. Those will be all over the place in those battleground states.
And from Trump's point of view, the fact that, I mean, his speech at the convention, an hour and a half, 97 minutes long, rambling in the extreme, his own lack of mental rigor, his own gaffes, will now they be more sharply in focus now that Biden's gaffes are off the stage?
Yeah, I think they will. I think Trump's speech was uniquely terrible. I think he had an opportunity, and I think he blew it spectacularly. I think he started off strong, and he was very weak then. But it doesn't really change the fact that Donald Trump's greatest gift as a politician is that he plays the game by different rules to everyone else, and none of the usual caveats or distinctions or rules apply to him. Now, will some of his more extreme and outrageous behavior come into sharper focus now that it's not Joe Biden standing on the other side of the stage? Yes, it will. But will it change? Will it damage his appeal to a great extent? I'm just not so sure. In my view, he's still in very, very good position right now. But again, there's months to go.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with thejournal.ie. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.